Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through, Episode 6, The Good Man Review.
Welcome to Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through, a fan podcast dedicated to Fear the Walking Dead on AMC. Join us each week as we discuss the characters, story developments, and theories of Fear the Walking Dead. Send in your thoughts about each episode by calling 304-837-2278 or by visiting our feedback page at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here's your hosts, Brian and Ruthie.
Hey, everybody! Welcome back to Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. I'm Ruthie.
And I'm Brian.
And tonight, we are talking about the season one finale of Fear the Walking Dead, entitled The Good Man. This episode was written by Robert Kirkman and Dave Erickson, and directed by Stefan Schwartz. As usual, we will not curb our tongue as far as spoilers in The Walking Dead go. So if you haven't caught up, you should do that right now. They're doing a huge marathon on AMC. So
yes. Okay. Ratings. Ratings were slightly up and down this particular week.
Interesting.
The 18 to 49 was at 3.37, down slightly last week from 3.44 in the 18 to 49. However, the total number of viewers were slightly up at 6.861 million versus 6.665 million. It might have been 6.655. Talking Dead, 1.2 in the 18 to 49 with 2.384 million viewers.
Not shabby.
Not bad. Not fantastic.
Well, there might not have been a lot of people that realized it was going to happen. I certainly forgot about it until later. I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I would think next week when The Walking Dead comes back, the ratings will go way up.
Yeah.
I want to remind you that we have a little thing that we are doing called The Walking Death Pool. I mentioned it last time. And if you go to walkingdeathpool.com, it is a little, well, exactly that, a death pool, trying to figure out almost like a fantasy football kind of thing, except you're trying to figure out who's going to live and who's going to die for the sixth season of The Walking Dead. So on there, as new characters get introduced, you will be able to, you know, vote on them as well. But the existing characters, they're all up there. You can figure out if they're going to live or they're going to die. And you get to vote by, if you think they're going to die, what episode they're going to die, and you can vote by either human or walker. So anyway, it's pretty cool. So check it out, and you can join our pool, and there are some other pools as well. So I recommend it. Okay, so ratings. So I'm going to go first for once, and I am very torn with this. I'm going to give it a really high rating, but I have to readjust all the ratings for this season. I'm not going to do that tonight. But if I rate it against the other episodes, I'm going to rate it slightly higher at a 9.6. Sliced, diced, and julienned Vegematic soldiers.
Vegematic soldiers.
Or 9.6 zombie Pied Pipers. Or 9.6 Travis does his best imitation of Ralphie from A Christmas Story Beatdowns. That was a long one, but a good one.
That's funny. I am going to have to give it 8.75 retrieved cufflinks.
Yeah, retrieved cufflinks. I love that scene, by the way. Yeah, the way you were making it sound, you were going to give him a terrible mark, so that's not bad.
Well, no, but everybody else pretty much, well, you guys will see in just a second.
That is your highest mark, though, for the for the season, though, right?
Is it?
I think so.
Then I should maybe make it a little bit lower. I mean, I didn't. Okay, I did not dislike the episode, but I have a lot of questions about things and the way that things happened that I'm not really sure. Anyway, we'll get into it.
Yeah, and I think I am going to agree with you on most of those things. So as high as my mark is, or my rating. So other listeners, Corey Metcalf, fellow GSM podcaster from Triple Cast and 12 Monkeys. He gave it 7 getaway plans.
Very good. Robert Courtney gives it 9.5 busted knuckles.
And PB and Zane, Judy, she gave it 9.5, and she didn't try to give it a name. She just said 9.5, duh.
Oh, that's funny. Once again, we hear from Sweden. Sophie Blomqvist says, I rate this episode 9.5 out of 10 Doctors Wasted. And she gave the entire season 9 out of 10 collapsed societies.
And Dieta, we love you, Dieta. I rate this episode 9.5 flickering light infected closing in on you.
That's awesome. Okay. Malika says, I give the finale 9.5 gigantic Daniel balls. Just casually strolling in front of the zombie horde. For the whole season, I'll give it 9 dark pasts, referring to the adults of the show. So, thank you, listeners, for giving us your ratings. I love getting ratings from other people aside from us. It makes me feel validated. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. So, that's it for our ratings. But now, it's time for... And you know what? We keep saying that we need a bumper for awesome sauce. Well, I think I might have one.
Awesome sauce! Did you go back to like the very beginning and pull that?
I took that from a previous episode.
Yeah.
I don't remember which one.
It must have been a really early one.
Yeah.
Good times. Good times.
Awesome sauce. My first thing is Daniel quote, you should save your ammunition. Same thing that Malika was talking about. I love that just for its machismo.
Mm-hmm.
What gall. And if you don't remember it, here's a little clip.
So they're saying Edwards.
Who's saying?
Superiors.
There's no superiors left, man. There's no one.
Third battalion, Bravo detachment. First
is he turned?
Dead don't use tools, man.
Could be infected.
Nice night.
Sir, you're entering a restricted area. Stay where you are.
I don't want to have to shoot you, old man.
You should save your ammunition.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Holy s***. Multiple infected north...
Uh-oh.
Ruh-roh.
Yeah. So anyway, I thought that was awesome, that whole thing. Although I do have issues with it too. So we'll get to that later. What about you? What do you got that's awesome?
I don't have a whole lot, but I mean, it's mainly like, you know, little things like when Strand was feeling in all of his jacket pockets for the key and then Nick just pulls it out of his pocket and holds it up to him. I thought that was pretty funny. He just busts out with the key right when Strand is about to have a heart attack. So maybe that's one of the hidden talents that he was talking about.
Yeah, the hidden talents.
Mm.
I don't know how he could have known that.
I have no idea.
That's a whole thing. But anyway, my next awesome sauce, I couldn't help it. It was so shocking and so gory, but I loved it. The poor soldier walking into the helicopter blade. That's why I said sliced, diced, and julienne. Vegematic. Yeah, that was awesome. So shocking.
Yes, it was definitely shocking. I understood the sliced, diced, and julienned. I did not understand the Vegematic thing, I guess. So we'll have to get to that.
Well, I was trying to think of a helicopter Vegematic. I don't know. That's usually the type of thing that
interesting.
Sliced, diced, and juliennes.
Oh, all right. Cool.
Okay. What else you got?
Okay. Well, I liked when they, like, right before everything kicks off, Daniel says that he went back to, or he went to the arena, and I can't remember exactly how he phrased it, but basically he used the words dead inside, and I thought that was a great callback to the hospital where Rick wakes up.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, it said dead inside. Don't open, dead inside. Yeah.
Yes.
I like how they do those sort of little things. I mean, yes, that's something very plausible that he would say, but phrasing it exactly that way is kind of purposeful, I think. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, that was good. I talk a little bit about this later, but just overall, Travis manning up and literally beating Adams to an inch of his life. And I said it in my rating, but the way he was beating him up reminded me of Ralphie from A Christmas Story, how he was like lying on top of him and just beating him senseless.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I would have to, I guess maybe disagree with your take on it a little bit, but I don't know exactly what you're thinking about that. So we can talk about that, I guess, a little bit later.
Sure. Do you have any other awesome sauces?
Awesome sauces?
Sauce-eye.
Any more awesome
sauces?
Sauce-eye. I really liked the reveal at the end that Abigail is a boat. So I guess I would say that that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was awesome.
So many people are like, why don't they just get on a boat? Like, well, you got your wish. Hope you're happy. Well, you'll...
Yeah, I almost went with apocalyptical love boats. One of my things, but I thought that was, especially that last one was so long to say, I didn't want to add another one. The other thing, and you know, it's kind of a lot to mention in an awesome sauce, so we'll talk about it later, of course, but the last scene was awesome. To me, it made the episode. It was so powerful and so sad and so tragic that it moved me. So,
did you weep?
I might have got misty, but I don't think I fully wept this time. I leave that for The Walking Dead.
Oh, my goodness. That's hilarious. Cool. All right. Well, let's move on.
Okay, so now we discuss. So you notice that we didn't have an errata section this episode. We could have, in a way, but it's kind of funny. We had a difference of opinion last time about what cobalt was. And midweek, I put a little poll on the Facebook group to see, what does everybody else think what cobalt was? So I gave, was it four options, I think?
I don't know. I'll have to pull it up.
Basically, one option was basically what I said, destroying everything in the LA basin. One was destroying everything in the quarantine areas and the safe zones. One was just the quarantine areas, and one was other. Okay? So someone voted for the quarantine areas. Guess who that was?
It was me.
Yeah. And everybody else, every single one of us, the rest of you that voted for what I said, which was they were going to blow up all of LA. And to that end, I must say, yeah, we got it wrong. So that means that Ruthie, with her answer of just the quarantine zones, was correct. And that means that she is the showcase winner this time. She won. So what does she win this week?
Yes, do tell. What do I get? Oh my God.
Bragging
I
rights. What did you think
before? Anyway. All right, well, I'll take it. Well, honestly, I have to say, like after the first shot, I mean, like the very scene they opened with, I thought, oh crap, I was wrong. They are going to bomb everybody because I saw these like random fires and I kept thinking, where did these fires come from and why are they there? So I appreciate the kudos, but I'm not sure that you are completely wrong.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of seemed to me like there was some stuff going on that.
Yeah, it is kind of left open.
I don't know. It's ambiguous.
Yeah, they could have very well been blown up.
Or napalmed. I mean, isn't that kind of what napalm does? I don't know why you would go straight to napalm, though. I mean, that just...
Well, that's what they did in Atlanta.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. Like, well, how do you get from conventional methods to, well, we're going to go back to the 70s and use some napalm?
I don't know.
I don't know either. Anyway.
Anyway, that whole thing was cool, but at the same time, I did have some issues with the whole thing. So, the escape. So, I had a... You know, I gave this a high mark, and yet I have these problems with the episode. So they didn't warn the neighbors. Okay, I could see that. But they didn't even bother to shut the gate. So it's like, hey, we're leaving, and walkers, come on in.
Smorgasbord is open.
I thought that was pretty bad.
Well, I didn't mind. My problem was not that they didn't warn the neighbors, but it was that no one really seemed to notice. I mean, they've got the military enacted a curfew, and so no one is supposed to be out and about in a curfew. And I don't know about everybody else, but even without my windows open, I can hear cars driving up and down my street. Mm-hmm. So, and especially if you don't have, like, I mean, it looked like they were kind of, you know, eaten by candlelight or whatever. So if you don't really have electricity, so you don't, say, have your TV on or listening to music or whatever, it's going to be a lot more quiet. And so I just found it very odd that no one came out of their house and thought to themselves, I wonder where those three cars are going or why those three cars are going or how come those three cars are allowed to go. You know, just any of those kinds of questions that you would think that you would ask for a, you know, a little quarantine zone that has basically been on lockdown for so long. So that was one of my questions. How come no one notices them leaving? And I had quite a few questions that I feel like did not really either didn't get resolved or they were about why or about the logistics, I guess, of the episode.
Yeah. So. And, you know, last episode, I mentioned about the whole Vancouver zombie stuntmen thing. And
yeah, I guess they blew
their budget. What was that?
I said, I guess they blew their budget on this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Either they did that or that happened in L.A. I don't know. But because there were quite a few shots that were in L.A. But regardless, we went 5 episodes, hardly any zombies at all. And then suddenly we get the mother lobe.
Yeah, blammo.
Yeah, but... And I said how much I enjoyed the whole, you know, save your ammunition and them using the zombies as a weapon, sort of something that the wolves seemed to do and also the governor did.
Right.
So Daniel, in what, the 11th or 12th day of the apocalypse, he's already figured that one out, but...
He's the zombie whisperer.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, okay, they've had little to no experience with the walkers. Like, I mean, and it's kind of like, okay, seems to be a little risky to let out 2,000 walkers just to get out 3 people, you know? And
yeah,
talk about a huge amount of potential collateral damage. But,
well,
you know,
a huge risk, too. I mean, yeah. You can't control that kind of a thing. How do you know it's going to work in your favor?
Yeah.
Not to mention that I was a little bit, I was like, okay, I was a little peeved about that they did not show how Daniel got the herd out of the arena, but I decided to allow it.
Yeah, it would have. I wonder if they cut that scene or something, but it would have helped. You know, there was a shot, like that one shot where it showed all the walkers and how far they went back. You could actually see the arena and the walkway that.
Really? So they're that close to the arena, huh?
Yeah, they were.
Wow, that's crazy.
But still, it was very risky, and it just seemed kind of a crazy thing to do. Yes, they could use them, but think about what they did. I mean, like I say, they unleashed 2,000 walkers basically on LA, not just on the compound, and killed how many people? Dozens, maybe hundreds of people. And as well, how effective was it? They got out Nick. They got out Liza, but she died. And Griselda was already...
Liza was going to get out anyway, though.
Yeah.
And so was Nick, really. Well, maybe. Yeah. Anyway.
And they got Strand, which they didn't know who Strand was, but he's out too.
That's a bonus for
me. That's a bonus. But anyway.
I think this episode was a little uneven. There were parts where I was like, that was so cool. But then there were other parts that I was like, wait, what? How did they? What?
Yeah. So it was like I was of two minds with it. You know, it's like so cool. But at the same time, what?
Yeah. Like you're pushing your luck just a little bit. Yeah. The whole with the herd, the horde, whatever, the Pied Piper thing, the zombie whisperer, whatever stuff. I was kind of like, I can't remember the exact phrase, but isn't there a phrase for overkill? Because that's kind of what this was. You know, you couldn't come up with any. I'm like, yeah, it was a distraction, but you might have just basically destroyed Los Angeles by doing that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how many other, you know, it seemed like the military was doing a pretty decent job at clearing the rest of the areas, I guess, but dang.
But where are the other 17 and a half million people? That's what I want to know.
Well, maybe not as many of them are dead as we think. Maybe the rest of them or most of them are just, or were, I should say, locked in their houses until there's a basically a big old huge horde that's going to plow through anything in its path.
Yeah.
As the soldiers found out quickly enough.
Well, you know, we know about these safe zones, and we know that I mentioned in a previous episode about 50,000. Mm-hmm. Now, that was just based on looking at the map that was on StorySync. But I read someone came up with a different interpretation of what those numbers were. Mm. They were coordinates.
Oh.
I don't know which one is true, but I do know this. Since Nick mentioned that they lived in El Sereno, mm-hmm. the population of the community of El Sereno in LA was about 44,000. So obviously there's not going to be 44,000 that have been locked up, you know, trapped in the safe zone, I guess. But the safe zones could have had a lot more in them, theoretically. But still, it's nowhere near what the population of LA was. So where is everybody?
It's a good question. I don't know that we are ever going to know the answer to that necessarily.
They're on boats.
Yeah, they're all in the ocean, which is why it's going to turn out to be a bad idea, because they know how to drive boats.
It's going to turn into the Walking Dead Pirate Edition.
Arr, matey.
Yes.
That's funny.
So I guess the good man was named after Travis. That was my interpretation of it.
That's kind of what I was thinking, that they called it that because Ophelia was like, you know, these are good people. And he says, the good people are always the ones, the first to go.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
So we got to see, and it seems like Travis and Madison and pretty much all of them, I guess, have deep secrets, deep, dark secrets, except for maybe Ophelia, who seems to be, has no secrets whatsoever. I don't know. There's very little about her character. I mean, she's almost like Beth was in, you know, second and third season of The Walking Dead. Very little about her so far. you know. But this was very much a Travis episode, and I loved the transformation in this episode where, you know, he finally had to accept that the grave condition or the grave situation that they were in, that these infected were never going to come back, that they were a risk that they needed to be dealt with, and him having to deal with Liza as well at the end. And before that, what he did with Adams. And, you know, he made a promise to the guy. He let him go, and Adams turns around and, you know, does what he did and shot Ophelia. And that rage.
Yeah, I don't know about you, but I knew he was going to shoot Ophelia.
As far as that's concerned, I don't understand why he would bother. Like, why did he have to go back? Yes, he knew where they were going.
Pride.
But, yeah. Dumbass pride.
Right? I was going to say stupidity and pride, but that's usually what pride is. I mean, he was humiliated, I think, and he wanted to get back at Daniel, and he knew that the best way to get back at Daniel was to cause harm to Ophelia, and so that's what he did.
That's what he did.
I don't know if he realized, like, I mean, he was pointing the gun at Daniel to begin with. I don't know if he just changed his mind at the last minute as he realized it would be more harmful to Daniel if I shot Ophelia, or if he was doing a fake out, you know, and intended to shoot Ophelia the whole time. I have no idea. But did you watch Talking Dead?
Yes, I did.
Okay. So they talk about that in that whole little scene in that show. If you guys don't watch that, it's pretty good actually. They've got showrunners and actors and all that kind of stuff on, and they talk about the show, and sometimes you get to find out some interesting things that you might not have known before. But anyway, so in the on Talking Dead, I can't remember who said it, but someone said that, I think it was Cliff Curtis, said that Travis was set off because he felt like he had made an agreement, I guess, with Adams, and that, you know, he promised to let him go, and I guess Adams promised to take off or something, but he came back. So, and that, you know, is a breach of, I don't know what he said. Did he say like a breach of protocol or something? Anyway, it was a breach of trust, basically. Yeah. And so Travis was like, uh-uh, it's not going down like that. And my favorite thing about that whole scene was, like, he tackles the guy and he starts wailing on him. And then he's like, gotta get better leverage. And so he straddles the guy and starts like going after it again. I was like, man, he's like, and to me, I felt like I'm not sure exactly what you meant by that, but I sort of disagreed with the whole phrase man up, because I didn't really think, after seeing this, to me, I didn't feel like he was manning up. I feel like he was unleashing.
Yes.
And there's a difference, I think, because he was keeping all that under wraps, you know.
Yes.
He was acting like the cool, you know, he was kind of, I think, you know, he's aware that he's got this, I can only call it rage inside of him. And so he doesn't, you know, he probably keeps a tight grip on it and doesn't let things bother him that much, I guess. And, you know, kind of tries to be the mediator or whatever, you know, the person who's kind of, you know, like trying to make the peace, I guess, the peacemaker, you know, because he knows that if he gets going, then that's what'll happen. And I was actually pretty surprised that Maddie was able to call him out of it, I guess. And I thought it was interesting. And see, this is one of the high points of the episode, is because they showed each of the characters in turn. They showed Daniel. They showed Maddie. They showed Alicia and Chris, who were like, what the hell? Or not Alicia and Nick, who were like, and then Chris, you know, who also has a bloody face because the soldiers are idiots. And,
yeah,
and you know, and they're all just kind of like, I don't know if it was just shock or disbelief, but they were just standing there, you know. And Daniel too was like, whoa, I think I misjudged this guy. At least, I don't know, yeah. But that's what I would be thinking if I were Daniel.
Yeah, that was my take too. And I guess what I meant by manning up wasn't that he needed to man up as much as he seemed passive to the viewers and probably to the other characters. But yeah, that's exactly true. He was pent up, and for whatever reason, you know, I don't know if he had a rage issue in the past. You know, he mentioned, I think in the first episode, maybe it was at some point when he was trying to help Chris with his nose, that, you know, do you know how many times I've broken my nose or something like that? Which, yeah. I remember when I heard that, I'm like, why has he broken his nose so many times?
Right.
So I don't know what that past is, but he had that whole thing where he didn't, you know, had a dislike for guns. Maybe that's part of it. I don't know.
Yeah. See, that's what I was thinking too. And I didn't necessarily think that it was pent up as in like a, you know, a tightly wound spring that's about to, and you know, spring, I guess, or whatever. But to me, it was more like it was very tightly controlled.
Yeah.
Like he's very much in control of it. Not that, you know, he could flip out at any moment, but more like it's just not even something that we thought was going to happen. And
yeah.
Suddenly it's like, whoa, what the heck just happened? You know? And I thought it was kind of brilliant, actually.
Yeah, because it was.
It's like, you know, when you mess with the bull, you get the horns kind of a thing. And it's like, no one really expected Travis to be a bull, I guess. You know, they kind of thought that he was the meek little lamb and that Maddie was the bull.
Yeah.
But it turns out that, you know, if you cross him, you're not going to like what happens. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, certainly Moyers went to his zombie grave, his undead grave.
Yep.
Thinking that Travis was a pacifist.
Right. And I don't think, honestly, I don't think that Travis really cared if that's what people thought. You know, I mean, he didn't really act like he was concerned that people thought that he was weak or, you know, I don't know, afraid or whatever. Like, he didn't really seem concerned that Moyers was basically mocking him for not being able to shoot Kimberly, yeah. Which he said in the in Talking Dead that was kind of a conscious choice because Moyers was kind of like pushing him to do it and like trying to like egg him on or whatever.
Yeah, I was going to mention that he basically said, you know, I'm going to do this on my own terms.
Right.
And I thought that was insightful. But, you know, mm-hmm. Something I thought of like at the end there with what happened with Liza, you know, she brings up that whole thing about don't make Travis do it. It'll break him.
Yep.
Both of them maybe have never seen this part of him, because he definitely did have the strength to do it. And that's what makes me wonder. It's like, whatever that was inside of him, it seems like neither of them had ever seen it. Would you agree with that?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It's hard to say.
Well, I think perhaps, I'm glad you brought this up because I wanted to talk about that also a little bit. I heard someone else say that, I thought this was completely ridiculous at the time. And I also feel vindicated again because when Maddie and Liza are talking, the first time Maddie says to Liza, don't make Travis do it, it would break him. Well, I think I was listening to a different podcast. I will not name them here, but they said that it was basically a, like a power play or a power maneuver or a, I don't know, a statement of dominance over Liza for Maddie to say that. Basically, mm-hmm. They were suggesting that Maddie was basically saying to Liza, yeah, he's with me now,
yeah.
Kind of a thing, you know? And like, he loves me so much, yeah, that it'll break him to say this. And I'm like, sorry, guys, I don't think you're right. Yeah. And guess what? You weren't right, because they talk about it again in the very last episode. And Liza says to Maddie, don't make Travis do it, it would break him. As in, both of these women, we know, really care about Travis, and they, you know, are more concerned with him and how he will react than with making the other one, you know, do it, basically. The zombie death pact. And to me, it was more along the lines of, it's not necessarily that they thought that he was so fragile, but perhaps that they recognized what doing something like that might do to him as far as what happened earlier. However, I think that that trigger probably already came, and it was Adams who did it, and not the, having to pull the trigger for Liza. But I'm not sure, honestly. I mean, okay, saying it will break him. That could refer to a number of different things, honestly. You know, I mean, not necessarily like break his spirit, break his morality, you know, break his will. You know, I mean, what exactly is it going to break of his? I mean, what do they think? And I think actually whether or not it really will break him is yet to be seen.
But that whole thing, and I mentioned that in the episode about, this is my man. The answer to that, of course, was
no, they didn't think that. I mean, yeah. She understood that they both kind of, I mean, yeah, there's a natural little bit of between them, but it wasn't to that extent of, you know, I have to exert my dominance over you. It was more like, I don't want Travis to have to do something like that because, you know, whatever, it would be really hard on him. And
yeah,
you know, anyway,
the this is my man, of course, was I tried to do that earlier, but I had muted the phone.
Whoopsie. That's funny.
But as far as us thinking that it had more to do with his character and not positioning or, you know, stating your claim to the man, I would say both of us were correct.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm full of sound effects now.
I know, right?
Me and a mixer is a very dangerous thing.
Dangerous combo.
The thing, well, we had mentioned it, and I guess this segues into the next point. We talked about Adams, but he seemed like a decent guy until that last scene.
Yeah, and then.
Yeah.
You're like, what the heck are you doing here?
Yeah, I was not impressed.
I was not best pleased with that. Nope.
So it basically turned him into a guy that was just trying to get into Ophelia's pants that had, like you said, his pride had been broken.
Wounded. He said to Travis, one of the things in the word vomit when he was trying to get him to let him go, that he never did anything and he just tried to, what did he say? Help or be kind or something. And I was just like, oh, okay, well, he wasn't actually there. So, But clearly he just made a liar of himself.
Yeah. But that segues into the whole thing. Again, there was a poor, you know, representation, or should I say portrayal of the military in this episode.
Yeah.
So at least with this series, especially, the military has not been looked at in a positive way.
No.
For sure.
They have not. Okay, so let's talk about the military people really quickly then. So there were, you know, the soldiers on the fence and in the scissor lift and, you know, trying to evac and all that stuff. Then there were the ones who, I guess they parked in like an underground or like a parking garage or something. And so,
yeah,
that's,
it was a college, a community college.
I guess maybe none of them really thought about people trying to leave the area and, you know, basically grab any car that they could. So they just left it in a place where all cars are. And so that's where the soldiers went because they were looking for a car, but, you know, they were jerks.
Yes.
But then you've got the other guy who runs into the chopper blades. And I was just thinking to myself as I watched that, on the one hand, wow, that was, I mean, I wouldn't say cool, but definitely intense, I guess, you know, definitely evokes a response. But then if you think about it a little bit too much, it's kind of like, well, and that's the problem. Like, I watched the episode again and I was like, oh, so he.
You had a problem with that?
Yes, because this is the guy where, okay, the walker comes, they pour through the fence, and one immediately grabs this guy and tears a big, huge chunk out of his neck. Well, do you know what artery is in your neck?
Yeah.
It's your jugular.
Jugular.
And do you know how fast it pumps and how quickly, if it's like struck in the manner that I can only assume that his neck was, because that guy was basically, walker infected, whatever, he was chewing like directly on his neck, and he, you know, rips him off of him and he's gushing blood, and he's has the energy to run across the lawn or whatever and then throw himself into the chopper blades. I mean, that was my thing. I was like, well, if you want to have a guy do that again, I go back to the whole having a problem with, this is a really cool thing, let's make it happen, and not really thinking it through all the way, because you could have had the zombie burst through and not immediately chomp on his neck. Like, maybe get him in, I don't know, the shoulder or the arm or, you know, something other than his neck, where, I don't know. Okay, I'm gonna have to look it up. I don't know how fast blood pumps through your jugular, but I'm pretty sure that your major arteries in your body will empty your body of blood in like 30 seconds or less if they are nicked or struck or, you know, whatever. So that was my issue with it, because I was like, well, clearly he's had a major artery compromised.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. But yet he still has the energy to run up to the other guys, pause for a moment, and then run into the chopper blades. Okay. So I had a problem with that. But on the other hand, I was like, wow, it was really cool and honorable that that guy chose to take himself out instead of potentially infecting or compromising the other people, although I would have chosen a bullet personally. I don't know that I could have run myself into a chopper, but anyway, so again, there's a dichotomy here, and I'm trying to reconcile it, but I just, you know, it's lazy writing sometimes, I feel like, and I don't appreciate that.
Well, I had a different interpretation of it, but you make a really good point though, because wasn't he also the soldier that shot the walker that bit him? I think
yes.
He wasn't he?
He threw him off of his neck and then shot him.
Right.
And then he turned around and was like, oh crap.
Right. So you would think he wouldn't be able to do that. And now that you mention that, I have to think of the episode A from The Walking Dead season 4. That was a very powerful scene there with the Klain gang. Mm-hmm. Joe, you know how Rick takes a bite out of his neck? Mm-hmm. And Joe collapsed immediately.
Yeah.
So maybe the walker didn't get him to the same extent as Joe. I don't know, but
I thought he got him more. He's trying to eat, not just, disable, whereas Rick was just trying to disable him. But, he just wanted to, get him off of him, basically. And the walker was like, yummy flesh.
Well, anyway, so that part of what you said, yeah, I have to agree with. The second part of it, though, I had a different interpretation of it. I didn't think that the soldier intentionally went into the blades. The way I interpreted the scene was that he went over to the helicopter and was going to go in, and either they stopped him or he, got lightheaded and he just completely lost where he was going and walked into the blades.
Oh.
Accidentally.
Wow.
That's how I took it. He wasn't committing suicide. He was totally out of it, just about dead and disoriented. He walked into the blades.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but right. You could be.
I totally didn't think that either.
But like what you, I could totally see it being the way that you said it. So,
yeah.
And certainly the first part, like when I compare that soldier to Joe, clearly, Joe collapsed. He dropped dead like right that second that Rick bit him. So,
well, and I was looking a little bit, and it's the I think it's your carotid, I think, that's in your neck.
Yes.
So the carotid artery, when any of your major arteries, actually, you've got the carotid and the femoral and all different kinds of arteries or whatever. But apparently your heart pumps blood through your body at a rate of 5 liters a minute is what this one website says. Please, all of you medical knowledgeable people out there, tell me if I'm looking at, because you know everything on the internet is true. So yeah, apparently this, your body pumps, or your heart pumps blood through your body at 5 liters a minute, and you've got about 5 liters of blood in your body. And your heart goes faster when you run or exert yourself. So you'll be dead in a minute or less if that artery is nicked. And I don't see how it couldn't have been, because it's not, I mean, it is protected, yes, but when you slice someone's throat, that's getting their artery. So, you know, it's basically what the zombie did, but with its teeth instead of, you know, knife or whatever. So I don't know. I was like, well, but then I thought when the guy was, I thought to me, it was, he was running up to the people on the helicopter, because they didn't really, it didn't seem to me that they made any move or motion to stop him. They kind of just were taken aback. You know, this guy runs up to him and they're like, whoa, you know, you, what the heck, you've got, you know, this thing on your neck there. What's going on there? And so to me, it was when they, I think anyway, it was probably my interpretation, when they looked at him, he realized what he was doing. You know, like, it's instinct to go to your, you know, your buddies or whatever to, when you need help. And so I think that's what he did. You know, he wanted to flee. He wanted to basically just, you know, get away. And so he went to where the getaway was. But then he was like, oh, hang on a second, I can't do that. And so to me, I mean, you're probably right. He could have been disoriented and just ran into the blades. But I kind of thought that he was trying to kill himself personally. So, but then it's, the whole thing is negated by the fact that, how is he running around? I don't know.
Yeah. Strand. What's his deal?
He's super cool.
Where'd he make his money?
That's what I was thinking. I was actually a little bit surprised that he was actually like a legit rich person. I kind of thought that maybe that suit and those cufflinks and that watch were like the one nice thing that he had or something, you know, and he's like a true and true con man. But
maybe he is.
Well, I mean, they said he was a, I don't know, an actual con man, or I can't remember exactly how they phrased it, but I don't know. I mean, at least all the movies I've seen about con men, they're not really that well off.
Yeah.
To me, it seemed more like he was a, you know, maybe a mover and a shaker in LA or something, you know?
Maybe he...
Like he's an agent or something.
Yeah, James Bond type.
No, I meant like a talent agent.
Oh, a talent agent.
I'm glad I said that.
Oh, boy. I was way off.
Oh, that's so funny. Your mind goes to secret agent man, and I'm thinking more along the lines of he represents actors, and they're kind of, I mean, I don't know any personally, but they seem like sometimes they're kind of sleazy.
Yeah, you know, that he may be a talent agent. That kind of fits him.
Which, you know, I guess maybe you could be a con man doing that, because you kind of have to, I don't know. I mean, I guess the way that I assume Hollywood works is you sort of have to like schmooze, I guess. And maybe that's, you know, the same skill set for, I don't know. Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked him though. I thought the boat reveal, like I said, was pretty awesome. I was like, whoa, it's a boat.
Yes. That was, I was surprised. I thought, you know, there's this luxurious place, which is, seems to be, you know, obviously the walkers are not going to get them from the coast, you know, because there's a cliff at the beach and it looks pretty fortified. But then he says, no, you cannot stay. I was like, what do you mean you can't stay? I didn't know where he was going with that.
I know. I was like, what? You're going to kick them out? But I kind of wasn't surprised, actually, because I was like, man, that's really awfully quite gracious, considering, you know, the attitude he had towards Doug. I mean, maybe that was just sport, but it's kind of like, you know, quite generous of him. So what's up with that? What's going on there? What's he? I mean, like, basically, you invite strangers into your home for the zombie apocalypse. They're not leaving.
Yeah.
And so you better hope that you really like these people.
And I still can't figure out what he had in store for Nick. I mean, okay, he stole Strand's key. That was probably a talent that he didn't think he had, but still, I didn't quite get, other than the fact that Nick's a survivor, I still don't quite get what the talent was.
I don't know.
That he was looking for. But so why is he so prepared? Did he, one thing I was thinking of that would explain it, I mean, maybe he was like a defense contractor or a pharmaceutical salesman. Mm-hmm. And I know some of those pharmaceuticals, you know, executives or whatever, they can make a lot of money.
Oh, yeah. And be a little bit, you know, schmoozy.
Yeah. So did he have some kind of inkling of an upcoming apocalypse? I've been curious about. Obviously, zombies and the whole thing has been a part of culture in our world almost 50 years. I mean, it goes back before that, but, you know, the Romero-type zombie, you know, came out in 1968. So we have this, you know, huge cultural thing of zombies. And I think a part of it...
Wait, did you say almost 50 years?
Yeah, yeah, 1968.
When was the first song? Okay.
Yeah. Well, before that, you know, there were the like voodoo zombies and there were I Am Legend.
Right.
Story, which are more vampire like, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so there have been variations, but still the whole concept of a Romero type zombie started with Night of the Living Dead. And that came out in 68.
Okay.
So I bring that up specifically because I don't know how much, I tend to think quite a bit, but I don't know how much that has affected people's doomsday preparedness. Like, obviously, they're going to prepare for nuclear war. Some are probably preparing for financial collapse, what have you.
There's always something to prepare for.
Yes. But I wonder in that universe how many doomsday preppers there are. And then I look at this guy and I think, you know, what made him so prepared? And I'm, as far as the pharmaceutical angle, did he know about wildfire? If you remember Jenner, he mentions wildfire in season one of The Walking Dead, which I guess is the code name for, you know, the strain or whatever this thing is that creates zombies. And did he know about it? I mean, is this something that he was preparing for a long time, or was this something he was just preparing for in, you know, days or weeks or months? What do you think?
I don't know. I also was curious about how come this guy, you know, has all these supplies and a generator and all that kind of stuff. And my thought was more along the lines of, because of the kind of person that he is, maybe he just really doesn't want to have to rely on other people. He's very self-sufficient, I think. And
is he sociopathic?
I would not have drawn that conclusion. I was just thinking, you know, he doesn't want to have to rely on other people, and expecting power to arrive at your house is, you know, on a lot of levels, relying on other people. So he has, I don't know, I just kind of feel like the kind of person that he is the kind of person who always has a contingency plan, I guess. And part of always having a contingency plan, I would think, is having a plan if the world goes to hell in a handbasket, you know? And I guess kind of by natural extension, that makes you a prepper to a certain extent, you know? So I don't know. I just, that's kind of what I was thinking, is that he does not seem like the kind of person that would put his fate in the hands of others.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so that's why he has the things that he has, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, he's an interesting character for sure.
Definitely.
Definitely. So why don't they stay in the house for at least a little while? Seems pretty secure.
Yeah, well, I don't know. That was another thing I thought to myself. Really? A gun? That's the only way that you could kill her? Because even though we didn't necessarily see any walkers around his neighborhood and the gated compound, I guess, that is his house, doesn't mean they're not out there. And we know they're drawn by gunfire. Mm-hmm. After all, that's what brought down the farm. So I just facepalm, shaking my head. It's clear that they are still, you know, brand newbies about this. But then on the other hand, they were acting like a well-oiled machine at one point in time during the episode. So, you know, I appreciated that. And it seemed like they were a team that had been working together for a long time rather than just people who were kind of thrown into this situation and had never really been in this situation before, let alone been in this situation before with these people. So there's that.
Sounds kind of funny.
Yeah.
Oh, they've been in a zombie apocalypse before.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. They've never been in this. They have not had an opportunity to. There's no situation in life that could prepare them for this. So they've never had anything similar to this, A, and B, they've never experienced anything like this with these people, you know? I mean, whenever you're in a group of people, there's always going to be a dynamic, and the way that the group behaves is going to be a representation of that dynamic, I guess, or whatever.
Yeah. Abigail, that's going to be interesting next season, provided that they actually can make it out there.
Yeah. I mean, Ida wouldn't want to swim out there.
Well, it seemed pretty far out there. I mean, he needed binoculars and high powered ones just to see it.
Right. Well, and I mean, it's not like there's a dock, you know, out like anywhere. So you can't bring a boat that size that close into the shore, I guess, because, you know, it'll ground or beach the thing or whatever.
Yeah.
So
there's all sorts of things that could be waiting for them on Abigail. Like, I would think that there's a crew there. Maybe they're dead.
Maybe, but how would they have died?
I don't know.
Randomly? I mean, it just kind of, people don't just up and drop dead.
The flu, that flu, and all it would have taken would have been one person with the flu.
Maybe, but was it the flu? I mean, we don't know that it was the flu. They just said flu-like symptoms. And Maddie said, I had my flu shot. So that's the only indication that we've had that it was anything related to a flu, which I don't think it was. I don't really know what happened, actually. And if they were isolated enough, they could be just fine.
I was thinking of, what was his name? Peter?
I don't know. Peter.
Yes. The guy that Daniel blew his face off. Yeah. Because he definitely, you know, had some kind of contagion. He was.
Yeah. Well, he was definitely sick.
Yes.
And I don't, you know, I'm sure that the flu isn't the only thing that can make you. So I don't know. I'm just saying it's not necessarily the flu.
Yes. Not necessarily.
Or anything like the flu, the zombie flu, as opposed to the bird flu or the swine flu.
Yeah. So unfortunately, we lost a character this episode, Liza. It was kind of sad to see her go. I thought she was an interesting character. And I thought that Elizabeth Rodriguez was playing her well. You know, she was a character that I was invested in, and now she's gone. So what did you think about all of that?
Well, I actually, let me preface by saying I do not dislike Liza. I like her character just fine.
Okay.
But I was actually surprised that they didn't kill someone who was a little bit more, I guess, integrated, if you will. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, to coin a phrase from Friends, she lifts right out. Her only connection is she is Chris's mother. She's no longer with Travis. She and Maddie aren't like, you know, sisters or anything. She's not related to anyone else other than the fact that she's Chris's mother. You know, Maddie and Travis are a couple. Maddie's kids are Nick and Alicia. Travis is, you know, has Chris as his child. And Liza is his ex-wife. So to me, it seemed like she was the most logical to go because she would have, I guess, maybe her character, I should say, would have the least impact or whatever, the least connection. And so I was kind of surprised by that because I thought that they would have chosen someone who would have maybe been a little bit more impactful if she died or if they died, other than just, you know, Travis being upset that he had to do it and Chris obviously for losing his mother. Like, Daniel couldn't care less about her, really.
Yeah.
I mean, she didn't save his wife. You know, Ophelia probably was like, same thing, you know, didn't save my mom, even though she did everything she could and it wasn't her fault. It's probably, I mean, I'm surprised he wasn't more upset about it. But so that kind of surprised me a little bit because I was, like I said, I was not surprised that someone died, I guess, but I was a little surprised that they didn't pick someone that might have maybe, I don't know, made a bigger deal. Like Ophelia, I really thought that Ophelia was going to die. And I thought, oh man, that guy's about to get holy hell unleashed on him from Daniel.
But yeah.
She didn't die. And so I was like, oh.
Yes, you thought you were being tortured before.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
You only thought that was torture.
Yeah, and to that end, you know, Ophelia, like I said earlier, she is a character that we really don't know much about yet. You know, so killing her off, I guess I could see them doing that, but I guess then it may not have been as impactful. Like Daniel's wife, their Griselda, her dying again, we didn't have that bond with her, I guess. I don't know if it was the language barrier or that most of her talking was to Daniel. I don't know, but we didn't, at least for me, I didn't have much of a, you know, it didn't affect me too much. Yeah. But, there was kind of a couple of fake outs there. Like they made it look like Nick was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And then
Nick and Strand.
Yeah. And then it looked like Madison got grabbed in that whole scene.
Yeah.
And that was actually, I think that happened just after the zombie that got Liza. And I looked back at it and I actually, you can see if you look at it really closely, the moment that he gets her.
Okay. I was wondering that because I'm like, well, her scrub top isn't ripped. So
yeah, but you can see it if you look closely.
Okay. And it was where they're all.
Yeah. It was in the kitchen.
In the kitchen.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, and there was, of course, Ophelia and that. So, you know, Travis, which I thought it could have set him up, especially with the title, that he was going to be gone at the end of the episode.
Right.
He was never really in jeopardy.
No, not really.
I even thought maybe Chris was going to be in jeopardy when, you know, those skeezy military guys, you know, started getting all pervy with Alicia.
Oh yeah. I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Chris gonna die.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
But so Liza. Yeah. I was actually and the whole Chris and Strand thing. I thought to myself, it's kind of a miracle that they actually met up with each other. I was a little surprised by that. But again, that's another one that I will allow because otherwise, I mean, there are certain coincidences that have to happen in a TV show. Otherwise, you've got no show.
Yeah.
And I think this is one of them. I mean, they just, yeah, it was kind of, you know, I don't know, what do they say? Like, anyway, it was
kismet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was kind of like
happenstance.
Yeah. Well, that's not really, I mean, those are all words for, well, yeah. Not kismet, but those are kind of words for coincidence. But I was thinking something like a storytelling, like a plot device, yes. I guess. And like, yes, it is. But at the same time, well, you know, how else are they going to get them together other than they just randomly run into each other? You know, I mean, either that or they don't meet up this episode. So I was glad that they chose meet up this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I was like, whoa, she shows up just in the nick of time to open the door if she can get the door open. And why didn't Strand shoot the glass out of the door or something?
Yeah.
He's like wasting his bullets on body shots when he could have shot the glass out. And
I have thought of that too.
Yeah. See, that's what I'm talking about. It's like highs and lows all wrapped up in the same scene. And
I give this episode a 5. I don't know. I think I'm trapped by my own love for the universe.
And that's totally fine. I just kind of was like,
such a.
But then, you know,
I'm a nerd.
On the flip side, there is the whole, I mean, lots of good quotes. Okay. Starting with the dead inside quote. And then the, when whatever Dr. Exner, I guess is her name, when she's talking to Liza and she basically says, I mean, she spells it out. She says, what is family? And I was like, boom. Yeah. That's the question the show is always asking. At least that's the question that The Walking Dead is always asking. What is family? Is it blood or bond? And we know from experience or whatever, from watching, that in the other show, it's bond, not necessarily blood.
Right.
And she is basically forcing Liza to choose right then what family means to her. You know, is it blood or bond? Because she goes through it and says, yeah, if you want to take Travis, Travis is going to want to take his girlfriend and his girlfriend isn't going to leave without her kids. So your one extra person has blossomed into like five, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but still, I thought, you know, those are good questions to be asking. What is family question? That was good. So it's these things that bring it up, but then it's the whole, how did Daniel get that horde to follow him that, you know, brings it back down. Just like, oh, so, and yeah, just, and I am quite over the gross, disgusting eating sounds that the undead are making. I just really, I mean, it's like, and I'm just like, oh, I mean, I'm watching this show with headphones. So it's like being broadcast directly into my brain and I'm not a fan.
It's funny you mentioned that because we kind of went right over that, the Strand scene.
I know.
When he goes to, what was that guy's name? Melvin, I think.
Yeah.
I think so. He goes to Melvin and takes the cufflinks and says.
But he left the watch. Why? Why did he leave the watch? Why do you think he left the watch? Instead of, like, why did he take the cufflinks but leave the watch?
Probably because the watch had been contaminated. I don't know. I think there was blood on it.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I was thinking a little bit more. I guess I was reading more into it. I was thinking maybe sentimental value or
I don't know. But that whole thing was, they're slow.
Yeah. And again, I was like, okay, but how would he know that?
Yeah.
I mean, how much experience has he had with them? How long, I guess these are all, you know, questions related to the same thing. Like, how long has he been in the cage? We know it's been at least 9 days since, I guess, the outbreak or whatever you want to call it. So was he a recent addition to the cage and why was he put in the cage in the first place and all that stuff that we may or may not ever find the answers to. But another thing I wanted to point out really quickly that I thought that they did really well was the scene between Ophelia and Daniel. At the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
When he's talking to her and, you know, kind of trying to explain to her and like, he is sitting, like, if you're looking at your TV, he's sitting on the bed facing, like, the side of your TV, and she's sitting on the bed facing you, basically. And, you know, he's just kind of, he's trying to talk to her, and he reaches over and touches her shoulder very, very briefly. I feel like, and this might seem kind of silly, but I feel like, so she didn't visibly flinch, right? He just kind of withdrew his hand. I feel like she kind of emotionally flinched from him, if that makes any sense, because he senses it, you know, which is why he pulls his hand away. Instead of her having to pull away, he pulled away from her. I think recognizing that we're not there yet, you know, I'm still mad at you. And I guess this is the scene where she's saying, I thought you were the victim and all that kind of stuff. And
yeah, it was.
He says, would it have been better if I had been? And I'm sure she's thinking, well, yeah, but, you know, you don't want to necessarily say that to your dad. And so he touches her shoulder and she just kind of, even though I didn't think that any outward movement really was shown. He still, you know, I think reacted to her, I guess just her. He reacted to her. So I thought that was, again, very well done.
Yes.
I liked it a lot. Oh, and I also learned that the correct pronunciation of The actor's name is Ruben Blades.
Yes, that was mentioned on Talking Dead.
Yeah, he said it and I had to rewind it. I was like, wait, what?
And to that end, does that mean it's Cutter Blades? Cutter, you'll have to let us know.
Let us know.
Yeah.
And are you related?
I don't think he is. But
no, I know.
Yeah. I just had a couple more quick things. Did you have anything else?
No, just again that they said in the with the army when they said there were no more superiors. I think you played that quote already.
Yeah.
They're saying Edwards. I was thinking as in Edwards Air Force Base.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that will come into play next season.
Yeah.
Could be. I thought it was funny that Daniel said the hard part is done. And then she says, how are we going to get out? And he goes, that's the harder part. And I was like, oh my gosh. I was like a ba-dum-tsh. But anyway, I don't think I really have anything else.
Well, I just had a couple things. Exner, do you think she killed herself?
I am not sure. I don't know if she could do that being a doctor, you know? I don't know. I mean, she didn't have a problem taking out everybody else, so.
Well, my thought, and this was something Dave Erickson said and on Talking Dead, and I thought the same thing, that we don't see her die. And if we don't see her die, that means that she might not have died. Same thing goes with Tobias.
Mm-hmm.
And for that matter, the same thing goes for Adams. You know, he looked like he was close to death there from being beaten up so badly. But
right.
But I tend to think that he wasn't. Now, whether or not we'll see him again, I would be surprised. Exner, though, I wouldn't be surprised. Tobias, I don't know how that would work if they're on a ship. But, of course, I'd love to see Tobias again.
I think it would be amazing.
It would be amazing. Bring him back. We love him. Yeah,
I'd like it.
Yes.
Oh, and they said that maybe he'll be this show's Morgan. I was like, that would be cool. But I already feel like I don't get enough Morgan, so maybe not so much cool.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. You just reminded me of something that was on Talking Dead. I laughed so hard when Cliff Curtis was talking about Rick Grimes, and he said Rick James instead.
Rick James. I'm Rick James.
Yeah. Super freak. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. I grew up to that. Yeah. So the other last thing I was going to say is Chris and Alicia and that whole thing. I had kind of pinned Chris, and I think I did a pretty good analysis of what his character was, but I don't know if I said anything about him having abandonment issues, but I think he has abandonment issues, and he's going to have even more come season two because his mom is gone.
And he'll ultimately abandon him.
Yeah, and he'll probably have some issues with his dad killing her, even though he shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she wanted it, and, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I felt for Travis there at the end. It was he did seem pretty shaken up, of course. Why? Of course, like you would be. But
yeah, as you would hope anyway.
Getting back to Chris, though, I will say one other thing. He kind of defended Alicia's honor. So he was less of a weasel.
Yeah. Well, I liked also that this kind of, again, this reminded me of, you know, I can talk trash about my family all I want to, but that does not mean that you can't. You know what I mean? Like, no one else can, because Alicia says something kind of, you know, snarky-ish or whatever about his dad. And he says, hey, he's doing his best, or what he thinks is best or something. You know, he immediately defends him. And I'm like, that's right, man. You get mad at your family, but that does not give anybody else license to say bad things about your family. Because I might be, you know, complaining about whatever family member did, and the minute you chime in and say, yeah, he's a real jerk, I'll be like, excuse me, that's my, you know, whatever you're talking about. So I thought it was funny. True to life, I think.
I still tend to think that, and based on certain things that Dave Erickson said on Talking Dead, I tend to think that the character that's going to have the hardest time going forward is Alicia, dealing with how her whole life was planned and now she's on a ship, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe. We hope.
Maybe. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I kind of agree. I think she might not be
so good.
Yeah. With it. She might not be able to cope that well. Anyway, we'll see, I guess.
They definitely do seem to be bonding, though, those two, which is good. I mean, they're about a year apart. It was said, I think, in this episode that Nick was 19. She was 17. It was either on in the episode or on Talking Dead. They said she was 17.
I think it was Talking Dead.
Yeah, I think it was. And Chris is 16. So, you know, obviously they have, they're close in age.
Yeah.
So, just a little bit we got in What Did We Learn?
Yep.
So Liza, of course, spells it out for Travis that the infection is untreatable. Of course, he initially thinks, oh, we have antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
That'll fix her. But clearly that won't. And she says, you know, that the infection will eventually kill you just like anything else will kill you.
Yeah.
And as soon as you die, you get turned into a walker no matter how.
What she said specifically was, the bites don't turn you, but the infection's not treatable. So it doesn't matter how you die, we all come back.
Yeah, that's right. She did not say to him that the only way to put down a walker is through killing the brain. But I think they kind of know that at this point.
Yeah, I think they figured that out for sure.
Yeah.
At least I hope so. I mean, I think I consider Strand a smart person, and he saw how many times he had to, you know, he body shot them basically and nothing really happened. So I'm sure he can put two and two together. And certainly they knew how to do it when they were in the kitchen. I mean, it was headshots all around. Like they'd been doing it for years, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's all I had for things that were learned. What about you?
Okay. So I was thinking about, I really liked all the parallels in this episode between The Walking Dead and Fear of the Walking Dead. So I was thinking to myself, as I was watching this, that our main characters in both shows kind of learned the same thing, sort of, at the end of the first season. It's just that in The Walking Dead, only one person was told and that person didn't tell everybody else. But in this one, I guess Cliff Curtis is maybe the main character. I don't know. But Travis and Maddie were both told and they're pretty much the main characters. So, you know, it wasn't whispered in their ear, basically, that if you, you know, confirming that if you die, you'll come back and it doesn't have to be a bite. But I think the only difference really is that I don't think that they knew at this point in time that everyone was infected. So he didn't, or she didn't say that, but I kind of think it's similar knowledge, you know. Basically, Jenner told him that it wouldn't matter how you die because you'll come back because everyone is infected.
Right.
And she's saying when you're infected, the infection will eventually kill you and you'll come back because everyone who's infected does. So, you know, I don't know. I thought I was like that and the whole, you know, like the dead inside thing. And then I don't know, just other callbacks to the first season of The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
And the parallels between them. I appreciated that. So, you know, again, there it goes again, elevating itself up again. But then it's like, oh, then they go and shoot her in the head with a gun instead of coming up with a different way. Because, I mean, that thing like echoed and reverbed. And did they not think that everyone would come running when there was a gunshot? I mean, come on.
Well, that's one thing. I mean, we've seen them like use makeshift stuff like Ophelia used like wire cutters or something on that one zombie. But we haven't seen them use melee weapons. You know, there's no machetes or axes or, well, okay, the ball peen hammer that we saw that. But other than that, there hasn't been a lot of melee weaponry going on. So, okay.
Yeah, but still, I mean, get a sharp rock and
a sharp rock.
Again, you'll bleed out. I mean, she's a nurse. She knows how fast she'll bleed out if you nick her any of her arteries. Oh, and I Wikipedia'd it, by the way, and exsanguination happens in about a minute or so, and you can actually die before you lose all of your blood. You can die if you lose one half or like one third of your blood, according to Wikipedia. Mm-hmm. So
makes sense.
Yeah. So that guy would not have been. And I was reading another guy who said, I don't know if this was true or not, but He said that he got attacked in a home invasion and his, I don't know what the artery is called that's like on your inner arm underneath your, like right up by your armpit underneath your, on your inner arm. I don't know if it's actually in your armpit, but anyway, he got cut there, I guess. And he said that he was able to run like 20 steps before he passed out dead. And if someone hadn't already been on their way to basically stop the bleeding, then he would have died. I was like, well, all right, there you go. So yeah, that guy definitely would have passed out after walking a short distance, I think so.
Yes.
Anyway, not
to- but he wouldn't have gotten his head chopped off by a helicopter plane.
Maybe. not to beat a dead horse or anything, but.
Okay, Flight 462, the webisode. Did you get to see it?
No, I haven't watched it yet. But you can go ahead and.
Well, the links that are on our Facebook group don't seem to be accessible from everywhere, unfortunately, and we'll post one. But for those of you that haven't had a chance to see it, here's a really quick breakdown of it. It's very short. It's on a plane and we see a kid, you know, teenager, maybe a little younger than Chris, and an Asian woman getting on the plane. The Asian woman seems to have a bit of an attitude. We see the kid texting his mom. We see another passenger who kind of gets irate because he, I guess, got a text message or something that shows the flights are being canceled, but yet they are taking off. The kid calls his mom, and she says that she'll pick him up, and if the flights are closed or what have you, that she'll drive to pick him up if she has to. I don't really understand what that means. Maybe he has a connecting flight, but while he's on the phone with her, you hear screaming in the background wherever his mom is. And he asks, you know, what's going on? She just says, oh, not to worry. Just someone being upset in the background. Maybe she works at a hospital or something. And then he has to hang up because the plane's taking off. And the Asian woman with the attitude kind of swats him over the seat. And she did not look like a nice person.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's it. I mean, and supposedly they were going to release more episodes with The Walking Dead. I don't know if there's a new episode with the premiere or if they're just going to be showing this first episode on Sunday. But supposedly there are 16 of these. Mm. So,
like, how long was it exactly? Like, was it 30 seconds, a minute?
About a minute and a half. It was really short. Okay. It was like literally what I explained. That was the whole thing.
Right. Right. Well, I mean, it's going to be in the commercial breaks. So I imagine that, and I don't think they're going to show this one. I think someone said that the webisode, I think on Talking Dead, they said that the webisode was available now and that they would be showing the rest of them during the commercial breaks of The Walking Dead. Yeah. So, but, and that kind of makes sense because that the first one would be longer and that the next would be shorter if they're going to show them in the commercial break, you know, so.
We've been going a while, but I guess since it's the season finale, I guess it's understandable. But season one as a whole, do you have anything you want to say or have any impressions?
Not really. I would just say I like the universe, and so I'm going to stick it out a little bit longer. And so far, I like the characters and what's going on with them, I guess. And so
we do intend to continue podcasting on this, I think.
Yeah, it might be in a separate feed, but we'll let you guys know.
But I thought, like I said, the last episode, I said that that the individual ratings may not add up to the how I, you know, look at the whole season as a whole. I do still tend to think that's true. And as I said earlier, I probably need to take a look at all those ratings and probably adjust them down. When I look at season one of The Walking Dead versus season one of this, I would have to say season one of The Walking Dead was better. And, but that said, you know, I will say that I love the show and I love the universe, and I do look forward to season two. That's about all I have to say.
All right, then. Let's get into our feedback.
For our feedback, I guess the first thing we got an email from Thomas, And he mentioned to us in the email that it really wasn't intended for the podcast, but we
necessarily,
yeah, not necessarily. And it is going back a few episodes, so it is a bit long, and we are kind of going long at this point. So we're just going to say thank you.
We got it.
We got it, and we read it. And thank you.
Discussions.
Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe we'll email you back.
Yeah. But
maybe.
Thomas, thanks for getting back to us. We appreciate it. So
yeah.
As far as this episode, Corey Metcalf, he says, "Hey, guys, this was a fantastic finale. Although now I realize that the main character was Travis this whole time. When the season began, I really thought we'd be following Nick and his battle through zombie apocalypse while overcoming drug addiction, and I still wish that was so. But all in all, I really enjoyed this foray into a Walking Dead spinoff and look forward to the next season. Now, back to some actual Walking Dead. Yay! Yes, I agree. Yes. Time to weep.
Yay! I think, yeah.
It's coming.
Time to turn on your weepers. I think the way that they have decided to do this is actually pretty smart. I do kind of wish it were a little bit not so, I guess, not so close to the beginning of the next season of The Walking Dead. I kind of wish there were maybe like a couple of weeks break or whatever.
Yes.
That way there wouldn't be such a huge gap in between. But I do appreciate the fact that they're doing it, I guess, in the gap, to sort of bridge the gap, if you will, which that makes me happy, because I'm really glad that there was not, like, you know, just a huge desert of The Walking Dead. It made the break go by faster, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it did. I agree. And I would say to them, think of the podcasters.
Yes.
And us having to do 14 weeks in a row. That's
yeah, well, all the people who have regular TV shows are,
yes,
saying, why are you complaining? We have to do 22.
True.
But they're not 22 straight, so there.
Okay. Next. Go ahead.
Okay. The next was, again, from PB in Zane. She says, anyone watch the webisode? It was short but sweet. I liked hearing the references to Edwards Air Force Base. I used to work there. Holy crap, what a horde of walkers. Finally, if Alicia is supposed to drive away if something happens, why is Chris in the driver's seat? Good question. Liza saves the day, but it is so sad. So many close calls. Andy turns into mincemeat. Way to step up Travis. And Travis grows up. I think her rating was actually 9 and 9.5. Duh, Ophelia, visiting hours are over.
Oh, maybe it was. Okay, Judy. Yeah, if I got that wrong when I copied and pasted it, I'm sorry, but
sorry.
My bad. Not Ruthie's bad. My bad. Me.
Oh, and who is holding a gun to our Daryl in the Walking Dead preview? Oh, no, not Daryl. Agreed. Although I haven't seen it yet. I'm kind of staying away, not necessarily on purpose or anything, just because.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm trying to manage my expectations for some things so I don't get so super excited that it can never live up to them.
You remind me of that Mad TV thing, lowered expectations. Sophie Blomqvist. Sophie, you'll have to tell us how to pronounce your name correctly. I'm sure we're butchering it.
I think it's Blomqvist.
Blomqvist. I'm tongue twisted.
I'd like to buy a vowel.
Anyway.
I love your last name, Sophie, by the way. That's why.
It's my French-Canadian-American weird accent. Anyway. Wow, she says. What a great end to this season. We're left with some hope that they seek refuge on the yacht while we lost one main character. We have another injured. I love Nick's description of how the rest of the world is just now catching up to him and the mad world he's lived in for ages. I wonder how long he's lived in. If he's 19 years old, how long has he been an addict?
I don't know.
I was curious about that. It seems like he may actually be able to kick his habit now. I hope so. I really hope so.
Yeah, until he comes across some heroin. Because he might be, well, and okay, that was funny. I thought, I did want to say, he said, I feel so strange. And I was like, it's called sobriety. I thought that was funny.
Yes. You've gone through the 12 steps, even though you didn't actually try to.
Well, I wouldn't say he's gone through the 12 steps. I would say that he is sober by as a default setting, not necessarily on purpose. So, which is why I say that he'll be that way until he gets his hands on some milk.
Yes. He's been stepped on 12 times. How about that?
Stepped on 12 times. You know, the 12-step program involves things like making amends and stuff. And
yes, I know.
I don't see where he's done that at all. So
no, he has not. And I was just trying to be funny to those of you who've had addictions and have gone through the 12-step program. Please excuse my jackassedness.
Well, I applaud you if you have. That is impressive.
Yes. Anyway, moving on.
Okay, so Dieta says, awesome episode. Not happy about losing Liza. Should have known somebody was going to die. Still not understanding the teenagers with attitudes. Ophelia told Madison the neighbors didn't help them when they came for them after Madison says we didn't warn the neighbors. Loved how Daniel led, quote, the infected to the soldiers. Do you think Liza was killed because she wanted to only save her son and his father? I loved the extreme slash awesome sauce scary moments with Nick and Strand locked in the hall with the flashing light and the infected getting closer and closer each time the lights turned on and off. I love how Nick just follows him, Strand, that is, like a lost puppy. Second awesome sauce moment, when the soldier who was bitten kills himself by running into the helicopter propeller.
Huh. So she took it the same way you did.
Yeah. And finally, the moment Travis loses it on the lying soldier, just showing the good man has gone bad. Oh, I agree with Corey about what Nick said about everybody catching up to him. His nightmare of drug addiction. Yes, I agree.
And as far as the soldier with the helicopter propeller, I feel a pull is coming.
Very good.
Yes, we should do that again. That was good.
Yeah. And I'm sorry we didn't get your awesome sauce in our awesome sauce moment. If we had done that, we could have added it up there, but better late than never.
Oh, yeah. I totally missed that. That's what happens when you multitask. Malika Tazi. Hopefully I got Tazi right now. I don't know what to say, but I'll put down my two favorite quotes from the finale. Embrace the madness, which I like that too. Mm-hmm. And she agreed with me on what Daniel said. You should save your ammunition.
Yeah. Okay, William Bell, are you from the Redverse or Rverse? I'm just wanting to know. I figured someone was going to die. This is still The Walking Dead. Of course someone was going to die. I think we all could see Griselda coming. But Liza? Fear the Walking Dead finally threw us a curveball. Agreed. I didn't necessarily expect it to be Liza.
Yes, William Bell from Fringe. Of course he's not, but that was the thing I mentioned when he joined our Facebook group. So if you would like to submit your feedback and be on the podcast, the deadline for submitting it when we have an episode is 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central, the Tuesday after the episode has been aired. And a few different ways you can do that. Go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, of course, where you can submit your text, or you can actually submit us audio by uploading an MP3 or use the SpeakPipe widget. And there's also a phone number, which you hear at the start of the episode. And then, of course, there's our wonderful Facebook group, which I really, really, really want to thank everyone that is a member of that group. It has really blossomed. It's really been fun.
Yes. And even if you're just lurking and reading all the posts, we love that too.
Yeah. That URL is www.facebook.com/groups/walkingdeadgsm. You can also reach us on Twitter and Google Plus using Walking Dead GSM. And I also want to mention, I mentioned it earlier, but the Walking Death Pool. I'd love to see more of you join up with that pool and submit your predictions for season 6 of The Walking Dead. Again, the URL is www.walkingdeathpool.com. Not Walking Dead Pool, walkingdeathpool.com.
Okay. As always, we would appreciate your ratings and reviews in iTunes. You can do that by going to goldenspiralmedia.com/iTunes. That is a really good way that you can show your support for us if you like us. If not, then I don't know why you're still listening, but thanks. Also, as I was kindly reminded this morning, or today I should say at work, Christmas is 80 days away. So when you're doing your Christmas shopping online at Amazon.com, please use our Amazon affiliate link. You can find that by going to goldenspiralmedia.com/Amazon, or you can add in the Google Chrome extension and use the affiliate code VFR08-20, as in The Fringe, VFR08-20. You can also find out any other way you might be able to support us by going to goldenspiralmedia.com/support.
And it's worth also saying that when we post to Facebook, you can help us just simply by sharing. Share the links. That helps too.
Yeah.
So what's next for us? We'll do a season one recap during the hiatus between in the mid-season for The Walking Dead. We're scheduled to do a preview of season six with Justin and Kelly from The Walking Naked. Their podcast—it's The Walking Dead, a Walking Naked podcast. Anyway, we are going to team up with them. So, if you listen to them, you'll be hearing them soon on our feed. And we'll be back next week with an episode for The Walking Dead. So,
yeah. As far as what else is up next, as the next episode of Fear the Walking Dead is, we don't know yet. But we do know that we have a season two already, so we don't have to live in suspense with that, and that it will have 15 episodes, and that it will air in 2016. And we are guessing maybe the summer again.
Yeah.
Although I would kind of appreciate it if they would split the difference a little bit more between, you know, the end of The Walking Dead and the beginning again. So anyway, we'll see.
Yeah, what I'm curious about is whether or not they're going to split it like they do with The Walking Dead, or if they're going to play all 15 in a row.
That's a good question. I don't know.
So the next episode you'll hear from us will be for The Walking Dead. And that first episode is called First Time Again. I don't have a description, but is written by Scott M. Gimple and Matthew Negrete and directed by Greg Nicotero. And with that, I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And until next time, this is Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. Good night, everybody.
Bye.
Are you a podcaster who loves creating great content but gets overwhelmed by the audio editing process? Are you a business professional or an entrepreneur that wants to start a podcast but aren't sure where to begin? You need Pro Podcast Solutions. Pro Podcast Solutions has a robust suite of services to equip podcasters and help podcasters create better content than ever before. Visit ProPodcastSolutions.com today and find out how you can get your first episode produced for free. That's ProPodcastSolutions.com.